Hey everyone, David here. Severance is back. The Lorehounds are partnering with Properly Howard to bring you in-depth weekly coverage of season 2. Join me, John, Anthony, and Steve as we unpack every twist, theory, and revelation. We've created a dedicated feed just for our Severance coverage. Simply search for Severance Lorehounds in your podcast app, or find the direct link in our link tree. Our weekly episodes dig deep into the show's mysteries, themes, and bigger questions about identity and consciousness that make Severance so compelling. Season Pass and regular community subscribers get ad-free access to our weekly episodes, plus exclusive content like our Supply Closet bonus series, featuring fascinating conversations with experts like the team from Nevermind the Music. We've explored the neuroscience of memory and personality, decoded the hidden meanings in the show's musical themes, and there's much more to come. You'll also get Steve and Anthony's complete season 1 rewatch series. We believe in total transparency with our listeners. And unlike mammalians nurturable, we're happy to share all of our secrets. Find the link for the Severance feed in the show notes below, or search Severance Lorehounds wherever you get your podcasts. Come theorize with us about what's really happening at Lumen.
And remember, the episode you think you're about to hear is merely a reflection of the episode that thinks it's about to be heard.
Hello and welcome back to the Radioactive Ramblings podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Chase.
And I'm Aaron, your other host.
Sadly, today Richard will not be on the podcast. We had some scheduling conflicts and this bum needs to get his bread up, so he's at work. Yeah.
He's at work and the two of us have had our final exam season going on, so all around, it's been a little bit of a pain in the rear to get scheduling going, but we're here, and we're getting season 2 of Arcane, or at least the first act of it, reviewed, and yeah.
Yeah. But for today's episode, we're going to be covering Act 1 of season 2 of Arcane, and before we get into things, we just want to let you all know there will be spoilers for Act 1 of season 2, and that we're going to do a quick plot review of the act. As a quick refresher before we get into any of the real review and interesting moments and such. Yeah. The refresher is for both us and the viewer, just so we can make sure we're really focused in on what happens in this specific act.
Yeah. Chase, how are you doing today?
I feel a little like my nose has been a little stuffy today. I think my sinuses are not great, but other than that, I think I'm chilling. Why? What's up?
I was just wondering how you were doing. I haven't seen you all day, pretty much.
I a new season of Beastars came out on Netflix, and I watched the entire thing last night till like 4 in the morning. And then I went to bed and woke up at 1 p.m. and I was blowing my nose, and I had a bloody nose. Today's been, honestly, trials and tribulations for me. That's been going through it a little bit. A lot of minor things. I wouldn't say anything crazy, but
that's yeah. Very unfortunate, but it is deserved.
Sure. I'm sure I've done something along the way to deserve a little bad karma.
All right, let's get into the rundown a little bit. In Act 1 of Season 2, the narrative resumes immediately after Jinx's devastating attack on Piltover's council, plunging both Piltover and Zaun into turmoil. The explosion results in significant casualties, including the death of Caitlyn's mother, Cassandra Kiriman, and this intensifies Caitlyn's resolve against Zaun. Amidst the chaos, Vi and Caitlyn form a task force to apprehend Jinx and dismantle the Shimmer Trade. Their mission leads them into the heart of Zaun, where they confront Jinx and her new ally Savika, Silco's former lieutenant. A fierce battle ensues, testing Vi's loyalty to her sister and her commitment to justice. Meanwhile, Victor, having survived the Council attack, undergoes a profound transformation after merging with the Hex Corps. He returns to Zaun, where he discovers his newfound abilities can heal the afflicted, attracting a following among the Undercity's downtrodden. This development hints at Victor's evolving role and the potential consequences of his powers. In Piltover, political dynamics shift as Ambessa Medarda, Mel's mother, seizes the opportunity to assert control. She manipulates the Council's response to the crisis, pushing for militarization and the use of Hextech weaponry against Zaun, further escalating tensions between the two cities. All right.
Sorry, before we get into anything, is your, like, character on the dock a pig? Sorry. Like, the guest image for your... Oh, it's a sheep. Sorry.
I can't see what my guest thing is on the dock. It just shows me you, but am I, like, anonymous sheep or something?
Yes! I thought it was a pig at first, but I think sheep is just as funny.
That's pretty good. Maybe I'll just change my profile pictures everywhere to that sheep, just to keep it consistent.
Yeah, you are a sheep. All right.
Oh my god. Well, thank you for writing the recap today. I greatly appreciate it. That was a good reminder for me, because I may have done something that I said I wasn't going to and watched the entire season.
Yeah, I understand. Richard is gonna be probably having the best, like, view on things for our next episode, because he's gonna be back for our next episode. Because he hasn't seen Act 3 yet, so his, like, perspective on Act 2 will be really great to have. Yeah, I'm it's hard sheep, not to watch.
He's
ahead.
Got the wool over his eyes.
Okay. Nice.
Sorry.
No, yeah, once you start watching this show, it's really hard to turn it off unless you're like tired or something. This show is just so entertaining.
Every time I've sat down to watch this show and thought to myself, I'm just gonna watch 3 episodes, I'm just gonna watch this act, whatever, I always end up watching 6 episodes in one sitting. It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. All right, review start. All right, we're gonna cover the characters here. I'm only gonna go over, like, big, like, changes in the characters from, like, the main characters from season 1, but then we have some characters here that come to a lot of prominence in this season, so let's talk about them first. First being Ambessa. Ambessa is revealed in Act 3 of Season 1, I believe, and she's Mel's mother in Season 2. Even in Act 1, she has a really big role to play. Ambessa is Mel's powerful and authoritative mother, who comes from a war-torn region of Shurima. Okay. So, this is a little lore, not from the show. It's just from the, like, League of Legends wiki that they... Or not wiki, but website that they released after Ambessa's release into League of Legends as a champion. Because she got released as a playable character in the game after Season 2 of Arcane released. So, we can assume all of these things about her on the League of Legends, like... webpage are 100% accurate to the show. Shurima is just another area in Runeterra. We don't really have to worry about it for this story. But now she's a formidable and ruthless leader in Noxus, known for her strategic mind and ability to manipulate situations to her advantage. Ambessa's presence in the story highlights the complexities of Mel's character, particularly as it reveals the influence and expectations placed on Mel by her family. It's kind of iterated over and over again, even in season one, that the Medarda family is a very powerful and respected family.
Yeah, kind of going off of what you said at the beginning about Ambessa's release, I just looked it up, and apparently Ambessa was the first character to be released after Arcane came out. Like the
season
first
two,
character
yeah.
from the show. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the first like character from Arcane. Yeah. Because
yeah,
all the other characters all the characters in Arcane that are in the game already existed in the game before the show came out.
Okay. So this is really the first kind of lore edition, or not even lore edition, but like legend edition, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of both. She kind of adds on to the Noxus, like, power system, how it's ruled and stuff. But that's not really important. I mean, they mention it a little bit throughout the show, but it's not really that important to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Ambessa's ambition and harsh methods set a high bar for her daughter, contributing to the political drama in Piltover. So we see Ambessa is a very... She holds a lot of power. She comes to Piltover, and she's very easily able to manipulate a lot of the already powerful characters there. So, yeah, that's Ambessa.
Yeah, she has this really strong will because she's this warlord type of character, and it's really easy for her to kind of intimidate and manipulate the counselors. Especially we see her manipulating Sallow. Thank you. We see her manipulating Sallow pretty heavily in this first act, and even screwing him over at the end, which was one of my favorite moments for Ambessa. She just, as far as characters go that lean more towards villains, I don't know that I would necessarily put her in the full villain category. I don't think that she is a malicious character.
I think she's a villain for sure, but I enjoy her presence on the screen greatly. I think she's a very enjoyable character to have on screen. I actually like her character a lot. I think that she's definitely a villain and more on the evil side of things, but I think that like she does like a lot of things out of what she believes to be the goodness of her heart and for her family.
Yeah, that's what I was saying about her not being completely a villain, because in my mind, a villain would have to be someone who is genuinely doing things for the sake of, I don't know, trying to put someone down or commit some sort of horrible act. I think that Ambessa, throughout the whole time, thinks that she is genuinely doing what's best for her family, even when it gets in the way of her own family.
I mean, I think that's an interesting ideal, but I think that a lot of times actions speak louder than words. So just because you're doing something out of the goodness of your heart, even if it causes a lot of harm, it's gonna be harmful, it's gonna be villainous. I think that intentions definitely matter a lot, for sure. I think that someone who's doing something to be evil, that is, and the action they're doing is evil, is a lot worse than someone who's trying to do good, but their action ends up hurting someone. But I still think that Ambessa is a villain, for sure.
Yeah. Now, what is... it says that she's from the region of Shurima. Do you have any little lore tidbits on Shurima? Because I know that we're getting a Noxus spinoff, right?
Yeah, okay, so Shurima is not in Noxus. It's like a completely other area. It's just that her bloodline and like her family is born in Shurima, but she's a Noxian ruler.
Okay, that makes more sense. And I do believe, I can't remember if it was towards the end of season one or the beginning of season two, where we see the flashbacks of young Mel and Ambessa, and we sort of see the type of relationship that the two of them had, where Ambessa wanted to essentially raise Mel to be her successor. And you have that moment where she's like, maybe I'll make you a queen. And I think it's really interesting that it went a completely different direction, where Mel was exiled and she chose to make something incredible of herself, and didn't really need her mother's help. She had that upbringing, but she really is self-made, and maybe even successful in spite of her mother rather than because of her mother.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that Mel kind of represents like almost the opposite of Ambessa. Like Mel, she tries to solve things more diplomatically, while Ambessa tries to solve things with violence and force. And Mel is much more compassionate of the people rather than Ambessa.
Yeah, they're definitely two sides of the same coin, though, because I don't know about you, but whenever I watched Mel do manipulation tactics on like Jace in season one, or different characters throughout season two, I saw really similar tactics from Ambessa. The way that they manipulate people is really similar, even when it is for completely different goals, obviously. I just thought that that was a good detail that the writers put in there for the family to have those through lines.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, let's get into our next character. We're going to get into Singed. He's a brilliant and morally ambiguous scientist from Zaun. Singed is known for his twisted experiments and his willingness to push the boundaries of science and ethics. He works closely with Silco, contributing to the development of dangerous substances and weapons such as Shimmer.
Yeah.
And then following Silco's death, of course, in season two, Singed continues his scientific endeavors in Zaun. He's seen experimenting on wolves and preparing to use a toxic gas canister on them, indicating his ongoing commitment to hazardous research.
Yeah, I think that Singed is a really interesting character, particularly because of his moral ambiguity. I would say more so than any other scientist we see or have seen so far. He's willing to do some pretty horrible shit in the name of furthering science. And we do get a little bit of a glimpse later in the series as to why he's doing such awful shit, and he has a really great quote surrounding that. But at this point, he's just kind of a backwater scientist who's doing maniacal shit. He's almost a Dr. Doofenshmirtzy type of character. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we see that Singed is using Silco to further his research when he creates Shimmer. We see that Singed is not making Shimmer to make all this money. He's not doing it just because he wants people to get hooked on it. He's doing it because he needs Silco to further his resources in order to be able to create whatever he needs to create. We don't know yet at this point. But I think he's a really interesting character. I think a lot of the characters, especially the scientists, as you said, we see in the show are all like driven towards like progress and helping others, while Singed is a very selfish individual.
Yeah, he's also very reclusive. You don't see him working with people or developing relationships with people very often, unless it's something that he thinks is going to benefit his work. The one time that we sort of get a break from that is his relationship with Victor, but that's very limited even. And I think that the majority of that is in later parts of the season, so I won't get into it now. I don't have too much else to say about Singed. Do you have any final thoughts before I take us into Savika?
No, let's get into Savika.
Cool. As a former enforcer under Silco, Savika now seeks to maintain unity among Zaun's factions amid the ensuing chaos. She leads a rally at Vander's statue, aiming to inspire solidarity. However, her efforts are disrupted when Noxian forces, led by Ambessa Medarda, intervene, resulting in Savika's capture and the destruction of her prosthetic arm. The raid that happens at Vander's statue, I thought it was a really good example of... I'm sort of going off of Savika for a second. I thought it was a good example of how Ambessa is very power hungry and doesn't really care about Piltover or Zaun or anything. She's just in this for her own gain.
Yeah, I think that the way we see this a lot is how she treats the people of Zaun.
Mm-hmm.
She has a lot of her people just like beating the shit out of them and locking them up, just straight up throwing them in prison for no reason.
Yeah, I think that Savika in this season, especially towards the beginning, is such a good case study of what Silco's absence means to the underworld. I think that Silco was just this awful, terrible guy, but like a lot of awful, terrible people throughout different groups in history, whatever, he had the respect of the people that were working with him, or at least he had their fear, and so he was holding everything together. Savika does not have that same respect or fear, and everything is just kind of falling apart from under her.
Yeah. I mean, that's why she's trying so hard to get Jinx to come to the rallies and have people join together.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that Savika's doing her best to try and keep this ragtag group of Zaunites who were united for at least a little while from splintering, and ultimately it's not working out in her favor, which is quite unfortunate. The work that Silco put in to get the whole Undercity into one camp, it's like, it's all gone in a day. And for all the people that believed in his dream of Zaun, that must really sting.
Yeah. Alright, let's get into our next character. Let's get into Isha. Isha has not too much screen time in this act. She's the young orphan who is running away from the, like, Kembaran lackeys, and she falls into Jinx's lap. Jinx saves her, and from then on, they slowly get closer and closer as Isha sticks around with Jinx.
Yeah, their bond reminds me a lot of Vi and Powder's relationship in Act 1 of Season 1.
Yeah, for sure, I think. I mean, it's clearly a parallel that's being drawn, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like Isha.
Isha was genuinely my, like, top three favorite characters this season.
Yeah, Isha just does so much for Jinx's character development, and I don't want to boil down Isha to just being a plot device for Jinx.
No, because... okay, I was going to mention this when we go over Act 2, but I was seeing some stuff on Reddit that was really pissing me off about Isha.
Were they saying what I just said of, like, it's a of Isha being, yes, a plot device?
Kind of.
I disagree, yeah, with that entirely.
Me too.
I think that Isha was a really good a really good character in her own right, and just because her relationship with Jinx defined a lot of who her character is, I don't think that that takes away from her as a character. I think that she can both be a great character independently and be a great foil for Jinx. So,
yes.
That's my rant.
All right. Do we want to get into some interesting moments?
Yeah, let's get into some interesting moments. Do you want to take it away here?
So, I thought an interesting moment was when the Kembaran, like, Chainsaw Lady attacks the, like, I think it was like a memorial speech, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we see that Jace and Vi are about to work together to take down, like, the big, giant, you know what I'm, you guys know what I'm talking about, like, hulked out guy in, like, the armor,
yes,
suit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But we see that Ambessa's people take it down first. I, like, immediately was like, whoa, this, like, has to be foreshadowing of something, that, like, Ambessa is, like, somehow involved with this attack, or that like this is foreshadowing that like because of this Jace and Vi, or not Jace and Vi, but like Vi and the people of Piltover are gonna have like a disagreement and Vi is gonna go back to Zaun, something of the sort. Like I just felt like something was amiss because of that.
Yeah, I think that's something that I didn't think about when I watched for the first time. So that's really awesome that you caught that and thought that there was something more to that. To add off of that a little bit, I think that through the character of Mel, we've been taught as an audience not to trust Ambessa as well. So that kind of compounds with that.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Everything that Ambessa does is shady to begin with. So I think that, like, obviously adds upon everything she has her Noxian soldiers do, has me, like, questioning what they're up to, for sure. And the next interesting moment I want to talk about is Caitlyn's bastardization of her mother's charity. Her mother creates, like, the ventilation system that causes, like, the gray to not just, like, blast straight into the people's homes and Zaun all over the streets and everything. The gray is that really, really powerful and strong smog that basically instantly causes you irritation and other issues. Bleeding from the eyes, I think, too. I thought that was such an interesting moment because, I mean, we see in season one, like, Caitlyn is trying to be a champion of the people and in, I would say, opposition to her mother, who seems like she doesn't really give a fuck about the Undercity. But then we see now that her mother put into place this ventilation system because she believes the people of the Undercity deserve to breathe. And Caitlyn is using this as chemical warfare. What are we doing, Caitlyn?
I know. I think that Caitlyn, she is a little bit villainous in my head, the same, to obviously a much lesser degree than Ambessa or Silco or any of those other characters, but Caitlyn is certainly willing to do awful things for the sake of her goals. She gets tunnel vision when she has something in mind, I think.
Yes, for sure.
The first thing that I kind of took note of was Caitlyn's appointment to being the general / commander of Piltover at the end of episode 3. And that was a plot by Ambessa. So once again, we have Ambessa pulling the strings, and it's something that she springs on Caitlyn too. It wasn't a premeditated thing. Ambessa told Sallow that he was going to be the one in the hot seat. And then Ambessa just completely turns it around at that meeting and nominates Caitlyn, which she doesn't have any real authority, Ambessa that is, but clearly in the aftermath of this great tragedy and her use of her Noxian soldiers to sort of bring order, it's given her authority that she shouldn't have over the city.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think part of the authority she gets too is because she's like, my whole unit and myself will be devoted to whoever we elect. And then she makes a suggestion for who to elect with the assumed Sallow's backing, who has a lot of power currently, even though, because like she has Sallow call the meeting, so everyone assumes that her and Sallow are on the same page. And that's why she has her guy like sit him down when he's like, what the heck? What do you mean, Caitlyn?
Yeah, I know. This is one plot point, and I'm interested to get your thoughts on this. One plot point that really confused me in the first act of this season, has Jace quit the council?
Yes, he quits the council.
Okay, because I didn't remember that moment happening, and this whole first act, I was sitting here thinking, like, at the end of season one, he was the de facto leader of the council, and now he's just not even a part of it. I didn't remember him quitting, but
I think he says it in both seasons anyways, but in season one, act three, I'm pretty sure he says after, like, they sign the thing to make Zaun its own nation, to emancipate it, that he was going to step down anyways. But I think that in season two, he says, like, after the attack, he's stepping down or something.
Yeah. And Mel has got to be feeling pretty uneasy about the fact that her mother is gaining all of this influence in the city that she has sort of ran away from her mother to.
Yeah, I think in this act, maybe put a marker here, but I think this is where, like, at the end of episode 3, Mel gets, like, abducted by the Black Rose, right?
Yes, yeah, it's at the very end of this act. Okay. And we get a little bit of information about the Black Rose, too, I think. We hear a little bit of exposition about how Mel's brother Kino was killed by sorcerers in Noxus. And we don't really know exactly the details of what happened other than the fact that Ambessa has this really strong hatred of mages.
Yes. And then also, I think this is the episode that, or not the episode, sorry, the act where Ambessa is making, like, miscalculations in her movements. That, like, some of the things she's doing are unexpected because she wouldn't expect such a master tactician to make such a silly mistake.
Yeah, I agree. I think Ambessa clearly presents herself as being a really intelligent and great strategist, and that's very true. But I do think that she has the character flaw of being short-sighted in her plans.
Oh, and then we also hear from the like cat lady that was like painting the like shimmer stuff on Sallow that Ambessa seems backed into a corner.
Yes. And I actually noted that in my art section, the whole like painting thing, so I kind of want to talk about
that. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah. But anyways, my second thing that I took note of here was when Victor, in episode 2, at the very end, heals the Shimmer Addict, which, this guy is a recurring character. We saw him in the very first scene of season 1. Vander comes and saves him from a
deal
gone wrong. Yeah, exactly. So, this guy has had a long history. He's also, if you remember, the guy...
Yeah, he's the guy that helped Caitlyn heal Vi by getting Shimmer for her.
And then...
like a
betrayed them.
Yeah, he sold them out to Silco.
Yeah. But when Victor heals this guy, I thought that that was such an amazing moment. And it, from what I understand of his character in League of Legends, he's called the Machine Herald, I believe. And
His character is getting reworked in League of Legends right now.
Okay, I did hear something about that his character was getting reworked to fit the Arcane lore a little bit more.
Yeah, he's getting reworked. A lot of Victor's lore kind of got, I wouldn't say like replaced, but augmented.
Yeah, but this, I think, is the first step that we kind of see towards Victor becoming that more messianic character. You can see the parallels between him and other holy figures, where he goes and is healing the sick, he's got his robes, and he's got the staff, and the whole thing is going on, and I love characters like that, who take on this almost divine role. Do you have any thoughts on Victor's beginning here?
I don't know, I think you got it all.
Alright, sweet. Should we mention I'll
mention Richard's points.
He
made a point about an interesting moment where I think Hemorrhoid, Jace, and
you
Heimerdinger, Jace, and Echo go to the Hex Cores, and they find out that the Hex Core has been unknowingly funneling the pollution into the waterways and air vents that lead straight to the Undercity, to Zaun. And I just think, like, it kind of... I think what Richard was trying to get at is it kind of lends credence to the fact that, like, a lot of the people of Piltover don't really think of how things are going to affect Zaunites or the Undercity.
Yes. I think that another interesting point going off of that is that Jace is the one who knows about the polluting Hex Core, the stuff going on in the Undercity. Victor doesn't even know that that failsafe thing is down there, if I remember correctly.
What do you mean?
Like, there's that Hex Core in the Undercity, or like close to the Undercity, the one that's polluting everything. I remember a plot point being that Victor was upset that he didn't know that that was there. And I don't remember if it was the first season or if it was the second season.
I don't think I remember that.
Yeah, I seem.
I mean, Jace didn't know it was polluting things.
So. No, obviously, I don't think Jace definitely didn't know that it was polluting things. I just mean that Victor didn't even know that that was down there, which I thought was an interesting thing. But yeah, and then Richard also made a point about the horrible enforcer and Noxian soldier brutality on the Undercity, which is nothing new from season one. That's just a continuation, but. It's so much worse this season. They really, it's the Undercity goes through it in so many different ways in this season. But before we go on to the art, I kind of want to talk about the music real quick. Did you think it was better? Did you think it was worse in this season?
Okay. I think we talked about this a little bit the other night. I thought that the music from season one was really great. Obviously, except for the Imagine Dragons, but
okay. I think that I've said this to you the other day. There's a Wood Kid song in this season called "Ashes and Blood." It's
that
so
song
good,
was so good. Dude.
It's so good. Wood Kid is the type of edgy. Basically, what I'm trying to get at here: Imagine Dragons thinks that they're Wood Kid, and they're just not. They're trying so hard to be, they want to be like them so bad, and they're just not.
No, I think that, I mean, we'll talk about this a little bit more later, but I think art-wise and sound design and music-wise, it's somehow, they've done the impossible, they've outdone themselves, it's somehow better in season two.
I agree.
I think that, I mean, we're going to get into it later, but Arcane's so good it got me listening to French music.
Yeah, this, it's so good, man.
The sound, or not the sound, the soundtrack, so yes, the sound, goddammit, the soundtrack for this season was really good. I think Richard talks about this in his... a little segment that he wrote later, but Heavy as a Crown, I loved the Arcane version of it. I went and listened to Linkin Park's actual version of it. I liked that one too, but I think the Arcane one was so good. That one was so fire.
Yes.
All right, I'm ready to get into the art, unless you have something else you want
to... Yeah, I had one more thing to say about the music, which is, once again, back to the Wood Kid song. He said that it was written from the perspective of, like, Victor talking to Jace.
Oh, that song in specific?
That song in specific. Because it was made for the show.
Oh, that's so sick.
Yeah, which, when you listen to the lyrics, it makes sense. But anyways, yeah, let's get into the art. Why don't we bring up Richard's points first, since he's...
Yeah, we'll talk about it. I'll talk about him.
Quick note here from editor Aaron, the song Ashes and Blood that I just mentioned as being written from the perspective of Jace talking to Victor, I messed up. I meant to say it was the 21 Pilots song that was written for this show, so sorry about that. That is my bad, but anyways, back to the program.
Since you did the whole Act 1 touch-up, so Richard said Jace touching the Wild Rune was a really sick art thing. I definitely agree. I think he's talking about when him, Hemorrhoid, and Echo are in the Hexcore area and they get sucked into like...
I'm never good. Every time you say it, it takes me like half a second to catch it. And
you're like, what is he talking about?
No, actually. A little pain in the ass.
Dude, I have to give credit where credit is due. I read that on a TikTok, but I think that might have been the most creative high comedy that I've read all year. So we'll continue with the Jace touching the Wild Rune. That was a really sick moment for sure. When it's like him alone after Echo and Heimerdinger get like teleported away from him and it's just him with the Wild Rune in like the white room and then it's like the infinite Jaces. I thought that was a really cool scene and I think Richard probably thought that too.
They do such a great job in this show of visualizing the more mystical components when you're shifting between dimensions or
I think they do a really good job of allowing the viewer to feel just as like befuddled as the character. I think a lot of the time when we see characters having like a crazy internal headspace moment where they're seeing things, it's kind of poorly done in a lot of shows where, oh, like the colors will distort or like their vision gets blurry or something like that, or like they start drowning out all the sound around them. But then we see Jason, it's like he's literally having a fever dream.
Yeah, I really enjoy that visualization because the whole idea behind it is something is happening to these characters that's completely beyond their comprehension, and I think that's reflected in the art style. It's like, you can see why whatever is happening is beyond human comprehension. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, for sure. All right, do you want to get into your art moments, or should I just continue with mine, and then we'll finish off with yours?
Yeah, I can get into mine. I mentioned my first one earlier, which was the shimmer painting on Counselor Sallow. I thought that that was such a cool idea of these shimmer tattoos that get painted over and this design that
comes out. Yeah, it's kind of like topical steroids almost.
Yeah, it is. And I really also like the idea of this drug that we know has a physical effect on people, that it is manifesting even on a character like Sallow, because I feel that in this show, we've seen the shimmer sort of have varying effects on people. Like, certain characters become these mutant monsters, and then other characters who are constantly in contact with the shimmer don't have much happen to them. So, seeing this middle ground. The
monster one is like a lot of overconsumption of it, probably.
Yes, for sure. That's like you're taking a Vander-sized dose. And
yeah.
Yeah.
You're taking a whole vial straight to the dome.
Yeah, but this more gentle painting thing, it was just visually interesting and I enjoyed it. But then the other thing that I thought was really cool was Victor's Hexcore cocoon. Seeing him in
when he was almost in the rectangle.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of Han Solo frozen in carbonite a little bit.
That's exactly what I was reminded of when I saw that.
I'm glad we're on the same page.
Dude, and then when Heimerdinger and Echo see the empty one, it literally looks like it too.
It really does. It looks so similar to it. And the sort of runes, you can hear the magic seeping out of it and whispering around it, and I don't know, you can definitely feel the air that something is changing inside of Victor during his period of stasis. So hats off to the artists for being able to portray a transformation like that so well. I also really like that he was in the cocoon for a while. It wasn't just an instant transformation. He actually, his body is undergoing something pretty...
Yeah, it was a whole episode, I think, right? Where he was just, out of the series. He was just...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that... Yeah, I agree with that point, actually, a lot, is that I think in a lot of shows we see, this guy got injured, and then it's, next day, it's been, 3 weeks, you're in a coma. But it's, none of that is ever portrayed. The actual, recovery process. So yeah, that's interesting.
We also get to spend a lot of time with Jace dealing with the stresses of maybe never getting his partner back. He thinks that Victor is kind of lost, and he's desperately trying to find a way to save him instead of destroying the hex core like he said he was going to, which will obviously cause some tension later on.
Yeah. All right. The art moments I found interesting were the gray, the way that they animated the gray moving was really interesting. And in the scene where they head to where Jinx is and Jinx gets away, and we see the gray coming through the broken glass and filling the room, you see, do you remember how the gray formed the shape of a monster?
Yes, that was a really cool visualization.
That is an Easter egg for the game. That's an Easter egg, because that monster is Fiddlesticks, who is canonically the embodiment of fear. and like that's your really worst cool. nightmare. Like he can turn into whatever he's basically it, but like even scarier.
And his name is Fiddlesticks?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. League, glad you didn't put that one in Arcane, because I don't think I would have been able to keep it together if you had a character named fucking Fiddlesticks.
Yeah.
Not that Smeech is much better.
Well, he's not supposed to be scary, I don't think.
But, no. Yeah.
All right, the next art moment I wanted to talk about was the Savika and Smeech fight, where Savika gets her new arm from Jinx. I just thought that whole sequence was amazing. I really, really liked the, like, almost music video-esque style of fights that they did throughout this season. I saw a lot of people complaining about this, and I didn't really understand why. I feel like for these fights, there doesn't really have to be the dialogue to tell us what's happening. I think that we are seeing it on screen. I think the music adds to it. I think they do a really good job in their soundtrack selection for the songs for these fights. And I like that they let the art do the talking, because the art is beautiful.
I agree. I think that they did that in season one with the fight between Jinx and Echo. And they saw that that worked so well, and it fit with the art style of the show so well. And I think they did that on a larger scale and more often in this season, and I'm thankful for it. I think that any scene that they do is just so creative and innovative. But specifically with this fight scene, the whole like slot machine arm was really fun.
Yeah.
When they're not afraid to play around with the concepts a little bit, I think that's when they really shine, and they take a lot of risks in this season that I think pay off very, very well.
All right. Do we want to get into the how we feel section?
Take us away, Chase.
All right. So I just wanted to start by saying I take back what I said in our last Arcane episode where we reviewed season one, when I was asked if I could spot any uptick in quality. I think Aaron, you probably asked that, I think.
Yeah.
And I do think upon a second watch of both seasons, because I got a good rewatch of season one, so I'm refreshed on that, and a rewatch. And now I've seen season two twice, because I watched like 90% of it again with Aaron after already finishing it. We really do see an increase in quality art-wise. And I think in everything we see an increase in quality, actually. This is a statement that I heard and I completely agree with. This is like the first like series, like hundred like million dollar project plus. I think it's $250 million, but it's like the first like $100 million plus project we've seen in a while where you can see where every dollar went. I truly like, I see this show and I see the $250 million. I see it in every second of the art. I see it in the soundtrack choice. I see it in the narrative. I see it in the character design. Everything feels so inspired.
I agree. Fun fact, actually, out of that $250 million, $200 million went to securing the rights for Imagine Dragons.
Imagine. No, Imagine Dragons paid them $250 million to be in the damn show.
Probably.
All right. I think that narratively speaking, season one and two are on the same level, which I don't think is a dig at season two. I just think season one is just so well done. But art-wise, season two does have an upper hand for sure. I think this act really does that's supposed to be emphasize. That is emphasize. Holy shit. This act really does emphasize how deep these characters are and how human they feel. I'm going to leave this a bit more simple, as I've seen the whole series twice over, and I don't really want that to be super, super influential of what I'm saying here and now about Act 1 of Season 2.
Looking at the series as a whole is also really helpful, though, so I wouldn't take that away from your thoughts at all. But yeah, the start of the season is not only an improvement, in my opinion, in the visual department, like Chase said, but the character work is so strong in this set of episodes. The fallout from Silco's death sort of bringing Savika and Jinx together. It's so unexpected, but the writers make it feel so natural. And giving Jinx people to care about who are a better influence on her, like Isha, it does so much to help her along in her redemption arc. Just an A-plus to the character work and the world building done in these episodes. The world, it's getting weird, it's getting unstable, and the stage feels very set for an incredible finale to this series.
Yeah, I'll go over what Richard said. He said, as Chase said, the quality does increase, I think in this set of episodes, it's most notable in episode 3, given the fight animation and style used during the Wild Rune sequence. The music is better, especially the special version of Heavy as a Crown by Linkin Park. Oh, okay, so he agrees with me on that. I thought he would say that he liked it, but he liked the original version better. But okay, that's really cool.
That's surprising to me, too.
The character development of characters new and old alike is super great as per usual, and the world still feels as alive as ever with the twin cities of Zaun and Piltover. Yeah, I think Richard has... I mean, I think we agree on everything here. I do think his emphasis of the Wild Rune sequence is really important. I do think that art was just breathtaking. I mean, that shit was incredible. Everything was incredible, art-wise, for sure.
Yeah. Actually, I have one more art-slash-moment point that also ties into the music. It's a little bit of everything that I think is worth bringing up and talking about for a second, which is, I believe it's episode 2 when we get a recap of everything that's happened in the underworld since Silco has died, and we get introductions to all of the different, like, Chem Barons.
Oh, the Chem Barons, yeah, and like, how they, like, disperse, yes. And, yeah.
Yeah, I know, and exactly we get it over the song Sucker, which is kind of the lyrics are a little bit goofy, but I like the vibe of it for that.
I feel like it fits perfectly, though.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
I think they do such a good job incorporating the music. This is why I was, like, so heated over the people being like, I really think that it takes away from the immersion when it puts me in a music video for a fight. It's like, what do you... It's so intertwined with how the show is already. And, like, how does that take... How does that not further immerse you, like, this awesome song that, like, perfectly is fitting with what's going on screen? I don't know. I just think that...
That kind of pisses me off, too, because, I don't know, you can have that criticism of the show, but if you don't like that aspect of the show, I think you might be watching the wrong thing. Because it's such an integral part.
Yeah, I think it's a little weird to enjoy Arcane so deeply and then complain about that, because I agree with you. It's so ingrained in what is Arcane, the show, and, like, all of these, like, really important fights to the story include some sort of music in it, and I think that furthers it. I think that enhances it.
I think so, too. I never once had a scene, except for the Imagine Dragons scene in season 1.
That's,
that's an outlier. That's the exception that makes the rule, for sure.
I mean, okay, we do mention this, like, every time we talk about the soundtrack in private, is that I feel personally, and I think Aaron agrees here, is that Imagine Dragons... Their inclusion in Arcane is, like, the one dark spot on its record.
Yeah, it just doesn't fit the vibe of Arcane very well to me. I feel so strongly about this show that it has such a great soundtrack, and everything is so fitting for the world and the characters. And the sort of middle school angstiness of Imagine Dragons just doesn't fit for me.
I will agree. That is so the one, like, music video-esque part of the show that does ruin the immersion, for sure. But I do think it is also, like, peak comedy. So I enjoyed it for what it was.
It was good.
I do think that having it as the intro... I think it would have been more forgivable if it was just that scene. But having it as the intro for every episode of every season was a little much.
Yeah, I will thank Imagine Dragons for the pure comedy aspect of me and Chase sitting in our living room, and every time the intro came on, me hoarding the Apple TV remote so that he had to watch the whole thing.
Yeah, this motherfucker would make me watch the entire intro every episode. Like, what? I don't want to listen to My Enemy every episode. Come on, please.
Every 40 minutes, everyone wanted to be your enemy.
And then it got to the point where I started singing along.
We were both belting it out. Our roommates must have thought that we were insane.
All right.
Should we get into our outro here?
Are we going to record on Sunday or Saturday this weekend?
I think so. I'm hoping to have this episode out on Saturday.
Okay. Let's get into the outro then.
All right. Sweet. You want to start us off?
Yeah, I'll take the Richard portion too.
Cool.
All right, everybody, I think that's all we have for today, and thank you all for joining us, and we hope you tune in again. Before I get into how you guys can contact us, I just want to say that we are going to try and expedite our process of covering Arcane Season 2. We know it's been out for a bit now, and that we had some scheduling errors, and we're sorry for that. We're just as excited as you guys to cover this, so... Yeah. Thank you for your patience. All right, some ways to contact us. First of all, being email. You can email us with radioactive@thelorehounds.com. Also, we have a channel set up for Radioactive Ramblings within the Lorehounds Discord server, where you can send us a message or chat about the show. Also, you can use this contact form or leave us a voicemail at lorehounds.com. At thelorehounds.com. And consider following us on Blue Sky at Radioactive141. And please leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. It helps other listeners like you find us.
All of that information about how to contact us is going to be in the show notes, along with all of the affiliate podcasts that we're involved with. So before we let you guys go, I just want to give a quick shout out and a little bit of information on the other podcasts in the network. First, to the ones who make all of this possible, our parent podcast, The Lorehounds. They've currently got some coverage out about Dune and a lot of other great things. Also in the network are excellent podcasts like Wool Shift Dust, who's covering Dune right now. Alicia is getting started on the new season, and it's going really well so far. I'm liking season two of Silo. I'm sorry, did I say Dune before? I meant Silo. Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, which is on hiatus, but if you are hankering for some Star Wars stuff, Alicia and John are going to be covering the first two episodes of Skeleton Crew over on the main Lorehounds feed. Another editor Aaron correction here. John and Marilyn are going to be the ones covering Skeleton Crew, not Alicia and John. I apologize. Anyways, back to the outro. Rings and Rituals is also on hiatus, but they've got a lot of great episodes to check out. Properly Howard Movie Review just started their new season. They're going to be rating movies on a scale of better or worse than a Ron Howard movie. Severance Podcast will be coming back as soon as Severance is back. And, of course, the newest affiliate, Nevermind the Music, whose season is going really strong. Mark and Nicole are super entertaining, so go give them a listen. Links to all of these and info on how to get a hold of us is going to be in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you all on the other side of the Hexgate.
Hey everyone, David here. Severance is back. The Lorehounds are partnering with Properly Howard to bring you in-depth weekly coverage of Season 2. Join me, John, Anthony, and Steve as we unpack every twist, theory, and revelation. We've created a dedicated feed just for our Severance coverage. Simply search for Severance Lorehounds in your podcast app, or find the direct link in our link tree. Our weekly episodes dig deep into the show's mysteries, themes, and bigger questions about identity and consciousness that make Severance so compelling. Season Pass and regular community subscribers get ad-free access to our weekly episodes, plus exclusive content like our Supply Closet bonus series, featuring fascinating conversations with experts like the team from Nevermind the Music. We've explored the neuroscience of memory and personality, decoded the hidden meanings in the show's musical themes, and there's much more to come. You'll also get Steve and Anthony's complete Season 1 rewatch series. We believe in total transparency with our listeners. And unlike mammalians nurturable, we're happy to share all of our secrets. Find the link for the Severance feed in the show notes below, or search Severance Lorehounds wherever you get your podcasts. Come theorize with us about what's really happening at Lumen.
And remember, the episode you think you're about to hear is merely a reflection of the episode that this